Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Brenda Peterson is an astute observer and an award-winning nature and wildlife writer. In a chapter in her book, Wild Chorus, she helps us to become conscious of the wild rumpus of the world that, for example, hides such beauty, grace, and stillness that's demonstrated by the great blue heron. She writes, "Sensory pollution diminishes people like stripping off layers of sensitivity, poise, and presence. Many species are going extinct in this loud, manic, crowded, and deeply distracted world. But what is going extinct in human nature may be our ability to be attentive, to attune ourselves to rhythms other than our own. The musical lilt and call of birds, the original songs that the wind makes breathing through each tree, the radical silence and hush of stargazing above timberline, the focus of a heron fishing." Peterson is directing us to look beyond the companionship we enjoy with our domesticated animal friends and invites us to explore how wild animals can become our guides and fellow travelers, helping us navigate the stresses of daily life in a rapidly changing planet. Brenda Peterson is a novelist, award-winning nature writer, memoirist, and writing teacher. She's been featured on NPR, The New York Times, Oprah Magazine, and many other prestigious magazines and newspapers. She's the author of more than 20 books for adults and children, including I Want to Be Left Behind, Finding Rapture Here on Earth, and Build Me an Ark, A Life with Animals, and Wild Chorus, Finding Harmony with Whales, Wolves, and Other Animals. So please join us for the next hour as we explore some essential lessons we can learn from animals with our guest, Brenda Peterson. I'm speaking with Brenda from her home by remote connection. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Brenda, welcome.
So good to be here, Justine.
It's so great to be with you once more. We've been together many times on many occasions on New Dimensions here and also in person with some very exciting travels we've done together. So, but I want for our listeners to know a little of your background and your first home when you were growing up and what that was like. Your playmates were not other girls and boys, were they?
No. In fact, this book Wild Chorus was originally called Animal Apprentice. And that's how the book begins, with a line, "I was raised as a wild animal. In my early years living on a remote Forest Service lookout cabin in the High Sierra, we were surrounded by many more animals than people. I imprinted on wild animals." And I think that gives me a kind of connection that is beyond human. In fact, some of my friends joke that I'm only half human.
Well, with all the travels you've done and the extraordinary experiences that helped you to understand this whole wild animal. I mean, and I know that you have your cats at home and you've had dogs and all of that, but boy, you have really been able to communicate and be and listen deeply to the sounds and what the wild animals have to offer us. I think that there's something that you would say that has to do with the idea of how nature impacts our lives. And we all know, Brenda, how with like storms and with wildfires and tornadoes and blizzards and all of that, that's very impactful. But I would love for you to talk about the quiet nature that surrounds us. And maybe you could do that by giving us an example that you write about in your book and that you've known in your life of an elder woman who would come up a couple of times a week in a taxi cab and feed the seagulls.
This is in the story called Birdsong Blues. And you know, we've lost 50 million bird species. They've gone extinct. And so birdsong, they've actually done science experiments and discovered that when we have birdsong in our kind of natural environment, our homes, we are less depressed. We are more resilient. And in fact, it's better for our habitat to have birdsong. So given that kind of facts on file, the story I tell in Birdsong Blues is of an elderly neighbor who actually had Alzheimer's. She lived up the hill in an assisted care, but she hired a taxi and she would come down to the beach where I live on the Salish Sea. And she would feed the seagulls. And you know, seagulls memorize your face. So when I go out on my deck every day to feed the seagulls, they come, you know, calling and calling, you know, and I can actually get so close to them throwing up, you know, little bits of meat and fruit. And they come very close to me. And then my cats sit there behind the window and go, gah, you know, because it's bird TV. Mm-hmm. So for this elder, she was so frail. And the taxi driver told me she's forgotten everyone except for the birds. And they remembered her. So she had this ritual of feeding them every day. And I would watch her. And then one day she disappeared. She didn't come. And I assumed that she had passed. So I took up her ritual. And I say prayers for the birds because God knows the animals need our prayers just like humans need our prayers. So it's a form of solace. It's a ritual. And it's a celebration of these extraordinary creatures, these winged beings who sing to us if we can just listen.
Now, Ananya, I think part of that story which moved me so much is that she really couldn't, she had lost her memory of her friends and family and in even maybe her own name.
Yes.
But she knew the birds knew her. There was something so deeply moving, Brenda, about that connection with that wildness. And I don't even think she got out of the taxi, did she?
She did sometimes when she was able to.
Yeah.
But if there was bad weather or rain, as you know, Seattle is full of very rainy days, she would stay. But I think she felt like she belonged. She basically said, I belong here. She remembered that. So she didn't remember her family. She couldn't recognize her kids, but she could recognize her beach.
That's so great. That's so great. I love it. You write about how your creation story is the biblical Noah's Ark. That's the creation story that forms you. And you write about how humans are in the minority on the ark. So tell us, what does that mean to you?
Well, that creation story comes from having been raised on that remote Forest Service lookout cabin where there were more animals than people, more wild animals. So, you know, there were maybe about 10 people in my first 4 years. And a multitude of raccoons. And, you know, there weren't wolves at that time. There are now on my birth forest. There were all sorts of lynx and bobcats. So that I really expected that I would grow up to have antlers. And my father's deer trophies were right above my crib. And I thought they were my babysitters because they were incredibly interested in me. They never looked away. And so you can imagine, I imprinted on wild animals. And I think children imprint on wild animals. They have imaginary friends, they have stuffed animals, they have their pets. And they also, I think, when they get to go camping or they get to go on boats, they can have relationships with wild animals. So that kind of context of having more animals than people is really how I see and navigate the world. And I think that's a very unusual birthright.
It surely is. And I know in the Noah's Ark story, the animals are the ones that are going to recreate the world. There's an analogy right here. I think that you are making, and that you understand that there is a birthright here for the animals, that they can really inform us as to how we can go forward. And
yes, they were my first teachers. They were my brothers and sisters. They were to whom I looked for everything. And that Noah's Ark story, you know, I was raised with people who really, really followed the Bible very closely. And I don't think I really tuned in until Noah's Ark, because again, my upbringing, my birthright, and the fact that animals, they didn't bring two, you know, couples, millions of people. They brought all the species, you know, male and female of all the species to repopulate the earth after the flood. And I think this is really relevant. We're living in a drowning world. Everywhere you look, down there in San Francisco, your atmospheric rivers, sinking islands like Tuvalu, you know, the East Coast in, you know, a certain amount of time is going to be underwater. The flood is upon us. And so the Noah's Ark story seems even more relevant today. So why not save as many animals? That's why the book I wrote, the first memoir on animals, was called Build Me an Ark.
Yes, that's right. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Brenda Peterson, and she is the author of 20 books, but her newest one is called Wild Chorus, Finding Harmony with Whales, Wolves, and Other Animals. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, Brenda Peterson Books. .com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. here with Brenda Peterson, author of many, many books, both adult and children's books about animals. And I would love to have you talk about the orcas. Let's talk about your experience of the orcas. And Brenda, there's something that you share with us in your most current book, Wild Chorus, where the first time you ever touched the what you would call the dome or the head of an
the melon
of the orca. So tell us about that experience.
Well, we were kayaking up here in the Salish Sea, and we were trying to keep our...
Just a reminder, excuse me, you're out of Seattle, so it's close. That's right on the edge of Seattle, right?
Yes. Yes, it's up north. It's my home. And I've been here for 30 years. And I live right on the water. So my family has voted me most likely to drown in my own home. Anyway, you're talking about the orcas, who are really my totem animal. This is a chapter in Wild Chorus called Granny, the Grandmother Effect. And it's all about this matriarchal society of orcas, who in fact are very, very devoted. The male orcas stay with their mothers their whole lives, where the females will kind of disperse a little bit and form their new pods, the family pods. This is a culture. They have a language. They have generational memories. But the grandmothers are the ones who assure the future survival of the next generations. So those matriarchs are the most important in the whole scheme. And they, in fact, Granny was 105 when she died. And I wrote a children's book about her called Granny, the Wild Orca. They have long lives. Now, here's the curious thing. Scientists are just discovering that there are three mammal species who go through menopause and then live on in postmenopause: the orcas, finned pilot whales, and humans. So here's the question. Why are they living so long? What is their evolutionary purpose in living so long? What is the grandmother effect? Well, what it is, they remember where to fish. They remember how to navigate. They remember and actually take on the lineage of everything that the orcas need to know to survive. Not only that, the matriarchs have a special fondness for their sons who stay with them, as I said, but they also, those sons are called mommy's boys because the grandmothers will feed them. And in fact, it takes a lot of energy for the matriarchs to take care of the sons. In fact, if a matriarch dies, those males are really, really vulnerable and might die along with them.
Oh.
So they're very dependent. But I think everyone remembers the orca who carried her dead offspring for 1,000 miles. That's grief, and that's maternal care that we can only emulate in our species.
That's a wild, yes, the word wild story about carrying that dead calf of hers. Her pod would give her some rest and they would carry it for a little bit and
yes,
so forth. I mean, so she was not alone in that,
no,
in that grief, trail of grief, I guess.
No, and she had a sisterhood of some, you know, younger orcas who were also taking care of her and fishing for her so that she could carry that weight. And, you know, they carry that weight until the newborn, the stillborn, disintegrates. So when you think about that kind of devotion to the next generation, feeding the sons, making sure that this orca family pod survives, it's really speaking to all of the grandmothers out there among our species. Think of how many grandmothers are raising children and actually taking care of older children.
That's right.
And making sure that that's a very long-term way of thinking about the family.
Right.
As opposed to short-term gain. I mean, when you have a sisterhood of animals, and I've been writing about this for a long time in my books, I just was watching yesterday, National Geographic has discovered female matriarchs. And they have a new, and they finally come around to it. And they have a new show called The Queens, narrated by Andrea Barrett. It's fabulous.
Oh, that's wonderful.
But they talk about the sisterhood as a form of survival.
Yeah.
So really, matriarchs and sisterhoods, I think I did a piece for Medium on the survival of matriarchs and how important they are. So all of you listening, I honor you, the elders, the wise women, we need you desperately.
Oh, how wonderful. Brenda, now going back to my original question, which was touching the melon, the first time you touched the melon of this mother orca, I think her name was Mauyak.
Actually, that was a beluga.
Oh, beluga.
That was the beluga, yes.
Okay, all right. So help me out with the beluga then. What was her name?
Her name was Mauyak.
Yes.
And she was a first-time mother, and she was in the zoo down in Point Defiance in Tacoma, Washington. And I had been going there because one of my friends was one of her biologist. And he called me because everyone in Seattle was waiting for the birth of her first calf. I mean, it was front page news. Everyone was tuning in. Well, that calf came into the world, never took a breath, was fully perfectly formed, but because probably in the thrashing about in that tiny captive pool, her blowhole was never able to open. So she was held in my friend's arms, and she never took a breath. And what Mauyak did, like the orca who carried her calf, was she carried that dead, huge baby beluga, and they couldn't take that calf away from her. So they called me to sing to her. And you know, you and I are singers, lifelong singers. And I had already sung to her before when she was happily pregnant. So she recognized me. And belugas are the sea canaries. They are the great singers of the sea. And she came up, and my friend Alan said, she wants to sound you. So I had to put my hand in the mouth of this many-toned creature and trust her because, you know, they have teeth. To just feel my hand and sound me. And what that felt like, I write about a lot in the book. I was utterly transformed because the theory of resonance, you know that theory in physics, is that if you strike a tuning fork, another tuning fork next to it will resonate and tremble and vibrate. I was the tuning fork. And she was tuning me.
Wow.
And I still dream of that.
Wow.
And so I feel that I have been not only imprinted, but literally taken into the mouth of this great creature.
Yeah.
And I am so grateful for that experience.
And Brenda, didn't you describe, like, when you put your hand not in her mouth, but on her melon, or what
on her
maybe
melon.
I would say the top
yes.
of her head, but the
yes.
melon, and you just felt all sorts of things. Just it felt otherworldly,
because the melon goes in order to vibrate, to go through the jaw and make those vibrations and those beautiful songs. Their melon has to vibrate, and actually you can see it visually moving up and down. So my hand was not only being, I was in her frequency, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So my hand was going up and down. I was watching it throb. I was watching it, you know, move. I was feeling, I was listening. And that is a kind of deep listening you talk about in New Dimensions that I believe that cetaceans do. Their whole world is sound. And I'm an audiophile.
Yes.
So I navigate my world more by sound than by visual.
Yes.
I can walk into a room and I can remember every bit of dialogue, but I don't remember what the room looked like.
Right.
Because I was tuning in auditorially, not visually.
Right. Right. Exactly. There's so much to be said about the dolphins, beluga whales, the orcas, and all of that in your experience. And I must say, remind our listeners, many of who know, you and I have traveled together down to San Ignacio Lagoon off of Baja, Mexico, and we've been at the birthplace of the gray whales and been sprayed by their spray. And so there are other times that we've talked about that on New Dimensions. But I would like to just have us briefly say something about, I'm going to shift to wolves.
Yes.
Why do wolves howl?
Oh, there's a whole chapter on that.
Yes.
And it's my favorite chapter. It's called Wolf Music. And I decided that I would interview a musician. And her name is Hélène Grémaud. She's a very famous French classical pianist. And she has also started the New York Conservation. It's called Wolf Conservation, New York Wolf, if you're on social media. And she fell in love with a young wolf named Alawa. And she wrote a whole memoir about it called, I can't remember the name, Wild Harmony, I think it is. And I called her up and I thought, well, she probably won't talk to me for my book, Wolf Nation. And she was very happy to speak. And we spoke for a long time. And I asked her all about why wolves howl.
For our listeners, I would like you to spell her last name because people are going to want to look her up.
Yes. And they're going to listen to her play Moonlight Sonata with Wolf Howling on YouTube. So her name is H-E-L-E-N-E, Hélène Grémaud, G-R-I-M-A-U-D. And that's how you can find her.
M-A-U-D as in David, yes.
As in David. Yes, and it's called, I loved it so much that I reprinted it in Wild Chorus.
Yes, yes.
Because so it was my favorite
people
chapter.
People can reference all of this in Wild Chorus. So I just want to say that. But I know people are going to be interested. Before we go into that, I'm going to have to take a break and remind our listeners, I'm speaking with Brenda Peterson. We're getting lost in the Wild Chorus, which is the name of her new book. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
Okay, here we